added, I imagine, to the fascination of the performance. I wonder if, had some other kid been targeted, I would have been as passive as my classmates were. Probably so. The teacher was off in his own world, worried only about his table saws. I did nothing in my own defense. While I eventually understood that Freitas wasn't Hawaiian, I must have figured I just had to take the abuse. I was, after all, skinny and howly and had no friends. My parents had sent me to Kaimuki Intermediate, I later decided, under a misconception. This was 1966, and the California public school system, particularly in the middle-class suburbs where we had lived, was among the nation's best. The families we knew never considered private schools for their kids. Hawaii's public schools were another matter. Impoverished, mired in colonial, plantation, and mission traditions, miles below the American average academically. You would not have known that, though, from the elementary school my younger siblings attended. Kevin was 9, Colleen 7, Michael was 3, and in that preschool era, still exempt from formal education. We'd rented a house on the edge of a wealthy neighborhood called Kahala, and Kahala Elementary was a well-funded little haven of progressive education, except for the fact that the children were allowed to go to school barefoot, an astonishing piece of tropical permissiveness, we thought. Kahala Elementary could have been in a genteel precinct of Santa Monica. Tellingly, however, Kahala had no junior high. That was because every family in the area that could possibly manage it sent its kids to the private secondary schools that have for generations educated Honolulu's and much of the rest of Hawaii's middle class, along with its rich folk. Ignorant of all this, my parents sent me to the nearest junior high, up in working class Kaimuki, on the backside of Diamond Head Crater, where they assumed I was getting on with the business of the eighth grade, but where in fact I was occupied almost entirely by the rigors of bullies, loneliness, fights, and finding my way, after a lifetime of unconscious whiteness in the segregated suburbs of California, in a racialized world. Even my classes felt racially constructed. For academic subjects, at least, students were assigned on the basis of test scores to a group that moved from teacher to teacher. I was put in a high-end group where nearly all my classmates were Japanese girls. There were no Hawaiians, no Samoans, no Filipinos, and the classes themselves, which were prim and undemanding, bored me in a way that school never had before. Matters weren't helped by the fact that to my classmates, I seemed not to exist socially. And so I passed the class hours slouched in back rows, keeping an eye on the trees outside for signs of wind direction and strength, drawing page after page of surfboards and waves. I'd been surfing for 3 years by the time my father got the job that took us to Hawaii. He had been working mostly as an assistant director in series television, Dr. Kildare, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Now he was the production manager on a new series, a half-hour musical variety show based on a local radio program, Hawaii Calls. The idea was to shoot Don Ho singing in a glass-bottom boat, a calypso band by a waterfall, hula girls dancing while a volcano spewed, and call it a show. "It won't be the Hawaiian amateur hour," my father said, "but close." "If it's really bad, we'll pretend we don't know you," my mother said. "Bill who?" The budget for moving us all to Honolulu was tight, judging from the tiny cottage we rented. Kevin and I took turns sleeping on the couch, and the rusted-out old Ford we bought to get around. But the cottage was near the beach, just up a driveway lined with other cottages on a street called Kulumanu. And the weather, which was warm even in January when we arrived, felt like wanton luxury. I was beside myself with excitement just to be in Hawaii. All surfers, all readers of surf magazines, and I'd memorized nearly every line, every photo caption in every surf magazine I owned, spent the bulk of their fantasy lives, like it or not, in Hawaii. And now I was there, walking on actual Hawaiian sand, coarse, strange-smelling, tasting Hawaiian seawater, warm, strange-smelling, and paddling toward